Hey, this is Brandon Crawford from the San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
It's Monday, April 17th, 2017, and this is episode 119 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. And we got two fans online tonight, myself, Chad King, and joining me all the way from Florida, past midnight, he's in the future, Eric Nathanson. How you doing tonight?
I wish I could tell you that the Giants were better in the future, but I mean, who really knows at this point? But I'm doing well. I'm hoping that the rain finally clears out for you Bay Area folk.
Well, they do play tomorrow. Since you're in tomorrow, have they won? Do you know?
Most definitely not.
No. Okay.
I don't know. Not that they haven't won, because I mean, it's Matt Cain. Like, say it was Bumgarner. But you know.
Well, we'll get to the, to Bumgarner, but yes, you're right. Matt Cain is going tomorrow, our number five starter. Look, let's go ahead and get right into the meat of this. We're a little bummed right now. We left you guys last week. Hey, look, we're 2 weeks into the season. This is our second podcast. We're doing well. We're on a good pace here. Eric and I keeping it up. They were 3-5 last week, and they were very close to being 1-6 or 2-4 or whatever it was. Carom, 2-5, something like that. We were saying it could be worse. Well, it's kind of gotten a little worse. They went 2-4 since we recorded. Since we recorded, because that night So 2-4 since we recorded. They're down now to 5-9, last place in the NL West. Okay, granted. Let's just head up the bull right now. Look, I've seen so many people on Facebook and all the different groups, the Buster Posey fan group and the Crook and Kipe fan group and all these groups, and it's always the naysayers and the ones who want to get attention. I get it. They're throwing out there, this team is the worst that Bochy's ever managed, you know, let's mix up the lineup, you know, let's get rid of Boch, all these crazy things, which I know I don't think those fans really believe, but many of them look at the 5-9 record and think that's it, the season's over. And I know that's a minority view, I get it, but at the same time, for those of you that are concerned, there are plenty of teams, in fact, every single team, the best of them all, even the Chicago Cubs from last year,
under 500.
Yeah, well, they are right now. You're absolutely right.
Yep, they lost tonight. Sorry.
Every team loses 9 out of 14 games at some point in the season. Every single team. Most teams multiple times, and most of those teams worse than 9 out of 14. My point is, it just sucks when you do that at the beginning of the season. It gives a different perspective on the season. If you're, like, look what the Giants did last year, right? Best record in the All-Star break. They basically had won 2 out of 3 games at that point. We thought there's no way they're going to lose the division. They're crushing the Dodgers. They're up by 8 games. They're going to win this by a landslide. Well, they had multiple stretches of losing 9 or more out of 14 games. So, again, everyone, let's just pull it back a little bit, realize that we're 2 weeks into the season, we're 14 games, that's not even 10%, we're 8 or 9% of the way into the season. We got a long way to go. They're going to have a couple of good stretches here. It's just a question of how many good stretches versus bad stretches.
I'm just, 50 games is about the marker where I feel like we'll start seeing what kind of team they are. And it's funny.
Year didn't apply, actually.
No. Well, I mean, it did, but it didn't. Well, 2 years ago, they started off, 4-10. And then they ripped off another great streak where they came firing out in like May and June or something like that, and then fizzled towards the end. So I think they ended up with the best record at some point during 2015. I remember them having another hot start.
Yeah.
Even though they were 4-10 at the beginning, there was some streak that kind of evened it out. And then they were basically winning 2 out of 3, 3 out of 4 for a little bit.
So you bring up 4-10 from 2 years ago. And I think that's a great thing to kind of hit right now. I wrote out, I looked up the standings since they moved into AT&T Park the year 2000. And they had a lot of bad years, obviously, in this in the early, mid-2000s. But they've had 2 years where they had worse records than they do now through 14 games. You just mentioned 2015. They were one game worse at 4-10. And they finished above 500 at 84-78. Now, granted, they didn't make the playoffs, but they had some really good stretches, and they were really just, you know, 4 or 5 wins off from getting into the playoffs. And a lot of people do point to that slow start at 4-10. Every win counts. I get it. But, you know, just like a sailor, they course correct, and it's the butterfly effect. Just because you start 4-10 doesn't mean that you're going to play better later. You know, it's just the nature of baseball. It's the ebb and flow of the season, and I don't think any team's going to play more desperate because they start the first 2 weeks of the season this bad. They absolutely. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say absolutely not, and part of it, to tie into what you were saying, is you also catch teams at different times. Teams like the Diamondbacks and the Rockies are healthier generally at this time, and then as the season wears on, their depth gets exposed, and that's why they start losing more games. And teams like the Giants, who have better depth, teams like the Dodgers, you know, the Cubs, the Nats, you know, those good teams, they have better depth, and that's why they're able to continue to win games even though they're losing guys. You know, there's the Rockies and the Diamondbacks, they're not going to be able to recover if, you know, a guy or two drops from the lineup.
How many times over the past 10 years, hell, all of baseball, have teams like the perennial Diamondbacks, Rockies, Reds, Marlins, in most of their poor years, of course, been in first place after April? I mean, it happens every year. There's always a team that you don't expect. They're in first place after a month. But by the end of the year, they're in last or second to last. That's just the nature of the game. Like you said, everybody starts out healthy. And some of these teams have a very, very shallow bench. And once a couple of guys go down out of the rotation and maybe one or two of their hitters, that's it. They're done. They're toast. And they have no one to replace them. And the Giants have had the depth to support them over the years. They have also not been severely bitten by the injury bug for most of their World Series years. So, you know, same with the Cubs, although they did lose Schwarber last year, but they had enough talent to supplant that. So, you know, Giants fans, just calm down. You know, this doesn't mean they're going to finish under 500, even though it is an odd year. I get it. It's an odd year, but I think the whole even year bullshit went out the window last year. Even though they made the playoffs, they were in the World Series. So they finished 4-10 one other time, and that was their inaugural year in AT&T Park, the year 2000. But remember, guys, they won 97 games that year. 97! I mean, yeah, they were the West champs, and they ended up losing to the Mets. I was there for the game at AT&T where JT Snow hit that tying home run.
Snow game. Yeah.
Off of Armando Benitez. I was there. I was fucking there, man. That was an unbelievable game to see them tie it up in the bottom of the ninth, and then, of course, you know, ended up losing to the Mets 3-1.
Yeah, he sticks his arm out and everything.
Oh, man. That honestly, that was one of the best memories I've ever had at the park, even though I've been to more, you know, wins of more import, you know, than a loss in the playoffs. But just that moment itself, kind of putting that in a bottle, was a pretty amazing moment. So, again, point being, they won 97 games that year. They started one game worse than they are now. Everyone calm the F down. Let's just see how it rolls out here. Like you said, I think a good mark is the first 50, 60 games, the first 2 months of the season. And then we can get a bearing. Hell, if they're 30-30 after 60 games, or 25-25 after 50 games, everything's fine. It's okay. Yeah. They're not going to be in first place. They're going to be in third or something like that. But at least they're going to be in striking distance. They can make a move. However, if they do continue on this trajectory, which I do not expect, and they're, you know, 20-30 after 50 games, you know, or 25-35 after 60, yeah, that's not going to be good. They're going to have way too much work to do. You dig too deep of a hole, and it's going to be too hard. You know, one of the things that we've been harping on, of course, is left field, if you listen to our last podcast, and our season preview, and the preview before that. It's not like we didn't have a left fielder to begin with, but Jarrett Parker, valiant effort, no fault to the guy. Love his guts and his determination, but DJ LeMahieu hits a fly ball, a rocket off Matt Moore, who just got tattooed on Saturday, and that was the aforementioned 5-0, of course. A lot of loud contact. Anyway, yeah. He crashed into the wall, and he snapped his right collarbone when he crashed into the wall.
The wall won.
Yeah, so the wall won, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's not the way we wanted the left field position to start shaking out either. You don't want to lose a guy like that. It seemed like the guys in the clubhouse really pulled for Parker and wanted him to take the reins as the guy. So now it's kind of Marrero. Mm-hmm. And, you know, who knows what. Actually, Mike Morris is making a start tonight for San Jose. I haven't looked up to see how he did. So he's back on his rehab assignment. So the Giants are going to have some, you know, options to play with. But, you know, it's just not the way you want the position. You know, it happens to be the one position where there's a fight going on, in a sense, where there's a hole at the moment. And it doesn't make it any easier to fill that hole. You know, you mentioned it. Okert was called up to take his roster spot. And it's the second time Okert's been yanked up and put back down. So who do you send? That's back on that. Sorry. So Okert, you know, yeah. He came up because they put another lefty into the bullpen, you know, but they're going to need to have that spot. It can't just be Gorky's running around out there. I mean, can they keep going with Aaron Hill and Chris Marrero as the left fielder?
I think that's what they're going to do in the meantime. That's not an 8 to 10 week solution, which is how long that Parker's going to be out.
You can't play with a short bench. You can do it swinging through Kansas City real quick with the DH.
You got an AL team. It's only two games, but you don't need the pinch hitters for the pitcher. But again, that's only two games. So once they called up Okert now and they go to Colorado for the next three, what are they going to do? Because not only that, but yeah, Posey's coming off the DL, going into Kansas City. He's probably going to be the DH there the first two games. So who do they send down? One of the options is Fedorowicz, but, you know, he's going to be out of options at that point. So they're going to risk losing him to waivers. I don't know if that's a huge loss.
They might have to do that. I looked into Trevor Brown when I saw that, and the only information that's out there on him is that he's injured a little bit. It doesn't say if he's going to start rehab soon. I just haven't seen anything about Trevor Brown anywhere. They could risk it, you know, maybe with Fedorowicz, because, like you said, Colorado's coming up. You don't want to send Okert down necessarily. You can hand you want to have more pitchers. Colorado is F Colorado.
Well, that's the problem.
Also, horrors, you know. So you're going to need the pitching just as much. I mean, the bench isn't going to be as much of a factor. That's a bum is going to pinch hit sometime this weekend. It's just that kind of series. You know, and so they might have to risk Fedorowicz being lost to waivers if they feel somebody like Trevor Brown's healthy enough. And honestly, I don't know who else is down there after that.
We talked about this in our spring training episode where, yeah, there were some names I didn't even recognize. So there's nothing no one of an importance. And if they lose Fedorowicz, it's whatever. I mean, you know, they got Trevor Brown waiting in the wings. Again, I don't know where he is in terms of his injury right now, but he's proven as a very, you know, good backup to Posey. He's very capable. You know, Michael Morris, like you said, he's starting in left field for San Jose tonight. In fact, when I saw that, I was really seriously considering driving 30 minutes north of my house to go see the game, because that's how close I am to Muni Stadium. But yeah, I just couldn't do it with the rain tonight. Man, you know, the thing is, heading into Kansas City, we got six road games. The Giants couldn't even have a winning record at home, which was really, really frustrating. They lost 3 out of 4 to the Rockies at home. And now they're going to play Colorado in Colorado. And that's, like you said, a house of horrors. The Giants are below 500 in Colorado since the inception of Coors Field.
Wow.
Other than when Barry Bonds used to, you know, hit 3 home runs a game there. I mean, they've really struggled there. Really struggled there. Despite the fact that the team is not a very good team. But almost every year, the Rockies are at or above 500 at home. They use that home field advantage very well. They're just a very poor road team, which, you know, kind of magnifies the whole 3 out of 4 losses to them this weekend.
Yeah.
But I don't know. This next two games are going to be very, very interesting in Kansas City because we got Matt Cain going, which we're going to see. We have some positive signs from him. He had a good start last time. He didn't do too poorly. His curveball was snapping, wasn't it? I mean, is that something that you noticed?
Yeah, I did. I really did. He seemed to be able to throw it in the right spots and go to it. I like it when he's got that as his get me over pitch because you don't worry about fastballs leaking over the center of the plate as much.
Yeah, I mean, early in the game, he was getting hit and his fastball was all over the place and he was walking quite a few people and then it just seemed to click and you could just see it. That 12-6 curveball was just bending knees, just breaking ankles and it was a little bit of a flashback of the old Cain. He still doesn't have the 94-mile-an-hour fastball. He barely touches 90 now, and that's unfortunate. But, you know, in the thin air of Colorado, because his curveball was so successful back in San Francisco, I don't think that's going to be something he can rely upon because of the thin air.
I don't think he'll pitch in Colorado. He's pitching tomorrow in Kansas
City.
I
meant Kansas City, right. Yeah, well, he's going to be fine there.
I was going to say the thing about it is the expectation on him tomorrow, American League Park, you know, Giants are going to have the DH. The expectation is really four or five runs in five or six innings at this point.
Oh, yeah.
And he met that last time. And then, a couple guys came on and Guerin bailed him out with an absolutely beautiful inning. But it was like vintage Cain. If he put starts like that together, like he did in his second start, every other start, it's going to be his job all year as long as he stays healthy. It was really nice to hear. You know, we've all buried him a little bit, and to see Matt Cain be Matt Cain again, it gave that spark of life. You know, he's one of the originals, so it's nice to see him excel. You know, he got his first win in the month of April since the same date. I don't remember the date, 2012. So it had been
five years.
Yes, it had been 5 years since he had won an April game.
Okay, I did not know that. Holy crap.
Which
like
is
I know he's only had a few, you know, four or five wins each of the last few years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Matt Cain's going to have a good start here or there, you know.
Yeah, you think back to 14. They're going into Kansas City. He never pitched in Kansas City during that World Series. He was injured in the 2014 playoffs.
That's correct.
So, you know, he wasn't around at that time. So it's kind of, you know, interesting. We get Cain, who didn't get a chance in the first game, and then Bumgarner, where there's like all sorts of articles out, you know, reliving game 7 from back then because it's the first time the Giants have been back and things like that. And we get Bumgarner on, what is today? On Wednesday, facing the Royals. And it'll be interesting to see if they could actually do something because it, you know, you wrote it here and that's the right word for it. It's weird that Bum is still winless.
Yeah. I mean, his stats aren't horrific. They're a little worse than normal Bumgarner status, but they're not horrible numbers. I mean, he had 5+ perfect innings, one start. He's had a couple others where he only had one or two mistakes. Like his last start, he gave up, you know, 2 runs through 6, and then he gave up another one in the 7th or whatever, so he gave up 3 overall. But he hasn't had horrific starts. It's just he's had, you know, 1-0 run support, of course, a 2. Bullpen blew up in his first start, so it's one of the he should easily be 2-0 or 2-1 right now, but the whole thing of him being 0-2 or is he 0-2 right now or is he 0-1 with two more decisions?
I don't know, where is it? There it is. I had to find the page again. He is 0-2.
Yeah, he is 0-2. So, man, it's frustrating because he's one of these guys. It's like, he's clearly pitching well enough to have at least a couple of wins, and he's taking the mantle of Cain right now. He's getting Bumgarnered, you know?
Yeah.
That's what it's feeling like right now. But, you know, look, it's only 3 starts. He's 10% of the way through the season. He's got Kansas City coming up, and it's going to be fun. And, you know, look, if he loses or if he gets destroyed by Kansas City and it makes the fans feel better there in KC, great.
Good
you
for
won
them.
A regular, you won a regular season game against Madison Bumgarner. We're really glad that he destroyed you in the 2014 playoffs. Who gives a shit?
Right. But, he won the one that counts. That's all that matters.
Yeah, that's what's so funny about these narratives that you see. Like you said, there's been so many articles written about this. It's like John Wayne coming back to Kansas City.
That's referenced in one of the articles, yeah.
Oh, is it? Really?
Yes,
that's so
yes,
funny because I just picture him as kind of like John Wayne coming out of the bullpen or something.
Yeah, he saunters out of the bullpen and struts to the mound.
Well, you know, he's a good old country boy, you know. It's
right.
It's kind of what you expect, but you know, every you know, Clayton Kershaw is lost already this year. It happens. It is what it is. But it's going to be fun, nonetheless. I really do hope that Matt Cain. Who thought that Matt Cain would have a win before Madison Bumgarner? Is that weird or what, man?
That's really weird.
In one less start, by the way, in two starts.
I'm so glad he got it out of the way too in his second start. I'm glad that Matt wasn't like four starts into it and the bullpen screwed him once or twice. You know, I'm glad that he was able to get it. And Guerin coming through for him, it just felt like because Guerin came in, what did he get, like first and second, and he struck out three straight. He was using that frisbee slider that Sergio had, and it was just darting. And it was just like the Giants lifting Matt Cain back up and being like, "We got you. Let's see what you can do this season."
No,
it was
great.
It was really cool to see his second start in. He gets it out of the way. You know, he doesn't have to stress every time out. And I know he's Matt Cain. He's a professional. He's been around for years. But you know psychologically when playing sports, something can get in your head, and you can't get rid of it. You know, and so. Now that he's got a win under his belt, he may be more confident the rest of the way. Frankly, he might pitch better than Samardzija. You know, it's entirely possible.
So let's look at the starting rotation. They're 14 games in. Okay, everybody has had three starts. Cain will have his third start tomorrow. Cueto has three wins. Matt Cain has one win, and Matt Moore has one win. That's it. That's their five wins. That's their whole team. We got Bum without a win. We got Samardzija without a win.
Well, Samardzija doesn't deserve a win. The guy, but Matty Moe, it surprised me. He's streaky. I did not expect him to be this streaky.
No, he had
a really good game and then two okay games.
He was real streaky with Tampa Bay, and then when he joined the Giants up until the last month of the season. The last month of the season and then into the playoffs, he was money. He was money. Yeah. But he, up until that point, was very similar to Samardzija. Both are wildly inconsistent. They had very similar ERAs and stats over the whole year, but they both were also very similar in how just one game they could dominate, one run over eight innings, you know, 10, 11 Ks, that kind of thing. Next game, give up three bombs and be out of there. Well, I shouldn't say Samardzija. Samardzija is such a horse that Bochy just lets him ride. You know what I mean? Like,
he evens it out.
And that is a value.
He had a start. What is this? Yesterday. He had a start yesterday where he evened it out. He gave up the runs early. They never came through for him. I never expected him to pitch. I think he threw seven innings yesterday. Never expected Samardzija to throw seven after the first inning. I thought he was going to be four or five because he had a high pitch count in the fourth and the fifth, and they just rode him. And he's thrown it up there at like 97 sometimes.
Well, that's the thing about Samardzija is that there was an interesting article. I can't remember who wrote it, but it was another local Bay Area writer. And he said, you know, I know you're going to laugh at me, but I really do think that Samardzija is worth his money. Now, I don't think he's really worth his full contract, but I understand the point he was getting at. And his point was that he's wildly inconsistent and he can absolutely give up a lopsided crooked number inning. But he usually, if he gives it up early, can settle down and give you many, many innings after that. And that's exactly what he did yesterday. He gave up three in the first, one in the second, was suddenly down 4-0. The Giants, of course, scored three in the bottom of the first. So it's 3-3 after one, 4-3 after two. And that's how the freaking game ended.
Well,
what the
I'll
hell?
Tell you what. I got to interject.
But like you said, he went seven innings.
There was a two-strike pitch to DJ LeMahieu before he got the base hit that Samardzija should have gotten and been out of that inning. He never should have given up that run.
And I never saw that. Yeah, I didn't see
that.
No,
so. I totally get it, but it's stuck in my mind since that moment. It happened. He called it a ball, and I'm like, damn it, if LeMahieu gets a hit here. I never thought it would be the difference in the game.
Yeah,
but
not in the second
he had
inning.
Him. Right, you know, but he had him. You know, I didn't want them to – they just scored three, so you want the shutdown inning. And I thought he was going to, you know, walk off the mound and then and then he gives up the hit. And then he does get out of it, and then he just cruised.
Yeah, he struck out, I believe, eight over seven innings, shut him down after that second inning. So he did have a lot of value there because, you know, if you don't have that length in your starter, he's going to be out after three or four, and then your bullpen's going to be taxed. So that's the value that that person was speaking of. Now, hey, if I could give, you know, if I had an ERA of 4.5 or 5 and I got $15 million a year, sign me up. You know, I'm just saying. You know, hey, Boach, I'll give you 7 innings of 5 runs. Yeah. You know, but no, I get the guy's point. That's a valuable commodity in today's, you know, major leagues, but it's frustrating. Oh, you know what? I wanted to say something about the Giants bullpen. The Giants bullpen, of course, has been much better this past week, which hasn't had too much of a positive effect on their record, other than they didn't blow more games than they maybe would have. So I have some stats here that are very, very interesting. So I know everybody was very frustrated with the Giants bullpen over the first week. It's been much better this past week. But here's some stats to make you feel a little bit better. It's a little article in MLB.com called "It's Not Just Your Team," and it's regarding blown saves. So far this year, here are the top 5 teams with the worst save percentages. We have Texas, and this is before today, of course. We have Texas, 6 save opportunities, 5 blown saves. They're 1 of 6, okay? Seattle, they are 2 of 7. Chicago Cubs, 2 of 6.
Oh, their bullpen's been a mess.
Yeah. The Marlins, 2 of 6, and the Blue Jays. 1 of 4. Okay, so those are the 5 worst teams, way worse than the Giants right now. Now, overall, if you compare the 2 months of April in 2016 and 2017, in 2017, the MLB bullpen ERA now is a 4.1. Last year, it was a 3.76, and in 2015, is a 3.54. So it's obviously gotten much worse. Here's the crazy stat, I thought. You know, there's some teams that are going to be really, really poor, like the Rangers and Cubs and everything like that. But last year, Major League closers, or I should say teams, closed 69.8% of their save opportunities. So basically 70%. This April, it's 60%. That's it, man. Dude, 3 out of 5 saves. That's it for all of Major Leagues. That's horrible.
It's almost flawed the way they count it, because if Derek Law comes in with a 4-3 lead in the eighth inning, gives it up, he gets the blown save, not like a blown hold.
No, you're right. This is not the closer coming in the ninth. We're talking about all leads in the sixth inning or later that are blown. Could be a 1-run lead in the sixth or the seventh that is blown, quote unquote. That team could still win, but it's a blown save. And that's what the Giants have had, right? They've had 3 blown saves so far. Only 1 by Melanson. It's because the bullpen's blown the other 2. And 3 of them, or no, 2 of them were in 1 game, right? So
yeah, it hasn't been as bad. The bullpen's actually been pretty decent.
Yeah, it has been lately. But anyway, I just wanted to let everyone know that, yes, apples to apples, which that's what these are, you know, they're 10% worse than last year. So the, you know, well, major leagues are much worse than they were last year.
No one in the pen through 14 games has given up more than 3 runs. And so I think that's pretty good. That means nobody's gotten shelled excessively. You know, a run or two has gone in at the wrong time. Like Block gave up his runs one night when Arizona extended the lead. Right. And, you know, things like that. Guerin and Strickland haven't given up a run. Everybody else has given up like 2 or 3 runs. And Derek Law is the only guy in the bullpen that's surrendered a home run. Nobody else has given up a home run. All these little blown things are not like the long ball killing him or anything like that. The starters have given up a ton of homers compared to the bullpen. I mean, considering it's just Derek Law, the starters combined have given up like 12 or 13.
Yeah. Even Bum's given up a few timely ones, including Trevor Story, which really was the main difference in the game against the Rockies. I know they were shut out, but the guy had not hit a home run yet this year. Remember last year he was at like 7 or 8 home runs by now? He had that historic start.
Yeah, he was the story, no pun intended, for real.
No, he really was. And now, you know, he hits his first home run off of Mad Bum, of all people. It's just goes to show you, baseball's a fickle sport, man.
Yeah, but that's Giants Rockies baseball, you know?
Yeah, it is. Usually in Colorado, but
yeah, but that's always how that crap happens.
Speaking of Marrero, we got a little bit of a who's not and who's not. And Marrero might be in both. Why don't you explain?
Well, I mean, Marrero hit his first major league home run Friday night, and they're one victory over the Rockies. He actually had two hits in that game, which was an accomplishment. And he's been in baseball for 12 seasons. This is his 12th season of professional ball. He'd been called up a couple times, I think in like 08 and 11. So that's basically 11, 12 years of minor league baseball. And he hit his first major league home run against the Rockies on Friday. So I give him a nod for being hot and hitting that home run. You know, it's his one big league thrill. But he's not hot because, you know, he's still hitting 154.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, I just we didn't write this in the notes, but I just wanted to mention, of course, Brandon Crawford's sister-in-law, his wife's sister. His wife is Jaylen Crawford. Her sister passed away from an asthma attack this week. Yeah. And I mean, I just... That's crazy. I mean, you hear people who have asthma attacks, and you know, when I was very, very young in baseball, I had exercise-induced asthma attack one time. So I've had one asthma attack in my entire life, and I know what it feels like, and it does feel like, you know, you're scratching for a breath, and it feels like you're going to die. But, you know, the majority of people obviously don't die. And no. For some woman to be in her 30s and to die from an asthma attack is just, it's heartbreaking. And, you know, it's pretty amazing that Brandon Crawford obviously took a day off and spent the time with, you know, his family.
He drove all the way down to L.A.
Yeah.
Overnight and then flew back the next day. He was there the day he took off. They didn't want to start him. I don't think it was even his choice. They didn't want to start him. But, I mean, he drove all night, like however long the trip is, from San Francisco to L.A. He drove her down there. He drove Jaylen down there.
Yeah. No, you know, really sad, you know, case of events, but he came back and dedicated his at-bats to his sister-in-law and ended up hitting a home run and pointed to the heavens and everything. So pretty special moment there for the Giants, and that was the game that they won 8-2, the only win of the series. But you know, just to kind of ground us all in the whole, oh, the Giants are 5-9, their season's over, you know, just realize that, you know, these major leaguers who should care a hell of a lot more than all of us about how the team is doing, they leave their team to go deal with family. Okay, so everybody, you know, chill out. Your family's more important than any of this.
What was really neat to see is that Jaylen's sister, Jen, I believe her name was, she was a really big Giants fan. They had just had a family reunion for their mom's 60th birthday at Petco that Sunday. So everybody had just seen each other at Petco and the Giants game and things like that. So apparently she was very much into the Giants. It was a big thing in the family, you know, obviously. So the connection to having Crawford do that, it wasn't, you know what I mean? It wasn't just like some one-off sister-in-law he kind of hardly knew.
No.
It was part of a huge, it was a part of a huge extended family.
Yeah, I mean, no, he knew her very well. And, you know, I'm sure he's very affected by this, you know, not as much as his wife, but, you know, very affected. So, you know, again, everybody, you know, just reflect on what's most important in all of our lives. And when the Giants are above 500, you're going to forget about this bad start and we're going to move on. So, it's all good. So we had Cueto listed last week and he added another win to his resume. He's 3-for-3 so far this year.
He's Johnny. You know? Cueto,
Johnny
know?
Freaking Cueto, man. I mean, the guy is just bulletproof right now. It's unbelievable. And I love his shimmy doll. His shimmy bobble doll is just unbelievable. I want that
so
bad.
Johnny Cueto shimmy bobble doll.
I seriously wish I was there that game, man. I would love to have that doll sitting on my bench right now. Oh my God, that's just awesome. It's so absurd the way this guy pitches. I mean, He's been fun to watch over the years, but now, of course, when you're a Giants fan and he becomes a Giant, you know, it's even more fun. But the fact, you know, the pauses, the quick pitches, the shimmies, the turning of the back, I mean, it just the smile, the hitting, the running, he's a pleasure to watch.
He's so smart, too. That's the thing. He gets away with all this because he's so smart.
Yeah.
He always seems to be in control. If he gives up a hit or, you know, gets in some trouble, you know, he bears down. It's not like it doesn't faze him. It's not like suddenly, oh, no, I can't do my regular thing. Johnny, like, there's never a time where I don't feel like he's in control. It's very rare you feel like an inning is getting away from Cueto. Like, you can feel like an inning is getting away from Smarsha or Moore or even Bumgarner once in a while.
Once in a
while.
Cueto,
mm-hmm. Yeah, but Cueto, I never feel like an inning is getting away from him. He's in control all the time. He's the first pitcher since Matt Morris, like 10 years ago or something, to sign with the Giants and then win back-to-back first three starts of the season.
Yeah, no, he's funny. He looks like he just toys with the batters. He really does. He looks like he's got a plan, and you know, once in a blue moon when it blows up, he goes, "I was experimenting." You know what I mean? Like it's not like he lost control. I mean, I don't know.
He's got talent and brains. It's really kind of amazing to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know, you know, the sad thing is, I think he's going to have another fantastic year with the Giants. He had a 2.76 ERA last year, right? Won 15 whatever games. He's going to have another similar year this year. Probably will be an all-star. Hopefully they make the playoffs and he does well. But that's it. He's done with the Giants this year unless he re-signs. And he's not at the end of his career, but he's certainly probably getting to the top of the hill. And he said that he wants to end his career in the American League, which I thought was very interesting. And the reason he wants to end his career in the American League, even though his brief stint in Kansas City was statistically horrific, the worst of his entire career, is probably the reason why his stats were so bad. He wants to face the best hitters in the American League, and he doesn't want to face pitchers. He wants to face, like, all hitters. So it's a challenge thing to him. Whatever, that's fine. But it doesn't mean next year he's going to sign with the American League team. That's not what anyone's saying. But, you know, look, if he's 276 last year and he goes sub-3 this year, do you know what that market's going to be for him next year? I mean, my God.
I think what depends this year is if he wins. I think that's something, you know, if the Giants win at all, I think that'll be in their favor. Because I'm pretty sure he's going to opt out. But
He's going to opt out for sure.
I could see him just getting, you know, a few million more a year from the Giants to come back for a couple years and then going to the American League, because Cueto, we've never really worried about injury with Cueto. He's very fit. He's very repetitive. He knows his body. He could pitch, you know, until he's 38, 39, maybe 40 years old. Bartolo, you know, somebody I think of, you know, Cueto could get, you know, balloon a little bit as he gets older and
Bartolo,
keep outsmarting people.
I love it. Bartolo Colon is 43 years old. I am 43 years old. And he weighs more than me. And I guarantee you I am in better shape than him. But it doesn't matter because his arm is golden and his heart is golden. And he is a fun guy to watch. He might pitch for another 2 or 3 years at this rate. You know,
yeah.
I mean, he's incredible.
And that's why I think Cueto has designs on pitching another 10 years or so. So I wouldn't be shocked if he stayed in San Francisco for his prime and then went to the American League when he's a little bit past it. But he just doesn't realize he's a little bit past it.
Well, that's the funny thing, is that if he does truly end his career in the American League when he's over the hill and past his prime, I mean, he's, you know, look, if he's not going to be at his top of his game, if he has a 3 or a sub-3 ERA in the National League, you know, he's going to have a sub-4 ERA in the American League on his best year. But after his prime, he's going to have like a 4.5-5 ERA in the American League. I mean, period. So I don't know if he wants to actually end his career with those numbers, but, you know,
he might not care about the numbers. Right. Exactly. He might not care about the numbers.
He might not care about it. He just wants to face, you know, 1 through 9, solid lineup, but. So, yeah, he's still on our hot list. You mentioned this earlier. Strickland and Guerin still have not allowed a run. What?
Right.
This is like bizarro world, because normally, well, especially Strickland, must have given up a home run by now.
Yeah, and it's funny. Guerin's the one that's impressing me. Strickland has been kind of ho-hum. It's been kind of good hunter because he'll have those flashes of brilliance. Guerin, though, he's got this – I mentioned the same thing earlier, this slider that's almost Sergio-like. And if he can keep this up, he's going to take over as the eighth inning guy. It's just going to happen naturally. Mm-hmm. The way he came in the other day was just a sharpshooter. It was a guy who comes in, puts out the fire – which is their opposite of the, but you know, he puts out the fire. He puts out the fire, and the team keeps rolling. I can totally, you know, unless Bochy likes being flexible and using Guerin, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe he's not necessarily the eighth inning guy, but he's the guy that's brought into all of the higher leverage situations. Because he's just looked fantastic. He's spotted it. People are diving for it, and then he's sneaking fastballs by them. Corey Guerin surprised me. I don't know if it's because he cut his hair or what it was. And there they go. Now they're down 3-0. Thank you, Blackhawks. Sorry.
Hockey.
Yeah, changing. The Blackhawks had the best record in the West, and they're now down 3-0 to Nashville. That was the overtime goal.
Yeah, well, you know, the Sharks did not have the best record in the West, but they've been shut out 2 games in a row, and now trail the Oilers 2-1. So I feel your pain, man.
The Hawks were shut out in the first 2 games at home.
Yeah. Not
also
good.
With the Sharks because the – oh, well, no, they scored.
No, not the first game. They won the overtime in Edmonton, right. But the last 2 games they've been shut out, yeah. So it was 1-0 last night. Anyway.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, I get it. Hawks fan here, you know. Yeah, I'm a Sharks
what
fan.
What can I do?
Not feeling so good about that. All right, so let's talk about the upcoming schedule. The Giants are 5-9 right now. They have a short week in terms of number of games before our next podcast next Monday. They only play 5 games. They got an off day today. They play 2 in Kansas City, and then they have another off day on Thursday. Then they play 3 over the weekend in Colorado, so a 5-game roadie. When we record next Monday, unless they go 5-0, they're still going to be under 500. So it's a little depressing in that sense. Even if they go 4-1, well, they're going to be 1 game under 500 by our next podcast.
There's some positives. There's Buster coming back.
Yes.
And it's going to sound weird, but having a day off between a Bumgarner start and then Colorado is wonderful for the bullpen.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask you, I didn't write this down, but it just popped in my head because you talked about the off days. They are not skipping Matt Cain, and they're going to go with him tomorrow in Kansas City. Good idea, bad idea?
Good idea, because you cannot psychologically tell Matt Cain that you don't have faith in him. And he might even give you the gamer response. I get it. You know, you want to shuffle because of the off days and things like that. But I think it's really more important for the organization to show Matt Cain that they are behind him and that they want him to succeed right now. He's not putting them in a position to lose. So I think the fact that Bumgarner also, we don't want to – I mean, the guy's never injured, but why put the extra stress on everybody? You know, Cain, I mean, with 2 days off, it totally screws it up for everybody.
Yeah, you know what? I'm gonna agree with you on this one, only because the psychological impact of Matt Cain,
right?
The slight wear and tear on Bumgarner, although I think that's negligible unless you do it many times during the season. But I think another important thing is the fact that you have Cueto pitching in Colorado, because if you don't, because he's their best pitcher right now, right?
Uh-huh.
And if you have him pitching in Kansas City, then you got 3, 4, 5 pitching in Colorado, including right. A Matt Cain. So you have Cain pitching in Colorado, along with Samardzija and Moore. Now, Moore I'm not too worried about, but Samardzija and Cain pitching in Colorado, I'd rather have Cain in Kansas City. Right. So,
and this way we get Cain in Kansas City, and then Cain gets to pitch at home again.
Which is better than Colorado. Yeah.
Yeah, against the Dodgers, too, mm-hmm. to start a homestand next Monday. So it gives him comfort zones.
Yeah. No, so I think overall this you know, it's a good call. If he was a rookie, if it was Ty Block that had started the season
And oh, they'd be skipping him. I really think so.
Exactly. And he had been shelled one of his two or three starts, then they would have been skipping him. But not a Matt Cain, especially because his last start was so good that they're going to go ahead and see what he's got.
He earned it. He really did. He earned this start with his last start.
Well, and you have to think of that. You know, you have Madison Bumgarner going the game after. He generally goes 6 to 8 innings. So the bullpen typically is not taxed on right. Bumgarner starts. And you have the DH, and you have an off day. So basically, the day before, they can have a very early hook with Matt Cain. If they want to go early hook with him, no problem, because they're going to have the arms, they're going to have the bats, and they're going to have the off day to cope with anything. So, I mean, Bochy has that luxury. If he's given up, you know, 3 runs in the first and 2 runs in the second, and they're down 5-1, he can pull them right away. And they got the arms to deal with it. And, you know, maybe they can claw and fight back to you know, get back in the game. But otherwise, hopefully, well, he has a good start.
You know, you throw on the Dodger series that I mentioned next week. This way, the Dodger series, which is a 4-game series, goes Cain, Bum, Cueto, Moore.
Mm-hmm. And that's good. Yeah.
Yes. That's really how you want it to go in a 4-game series at that point. Yeah. So the Giants are lined up, and I think that it's good that they, you know, looked ahead that far. And you know, you can use strategy with your rotation. We've seen teams do it. We've seen teams go to 6 pitchers at times and do, you know, the piggybacking pitchers things at times. And the Giants have a very favorable, you know, early schedule here as far as off days and getting themselves rest so that they don't have to overwork anybody.
Yeah. All right, so I think that's going to wrap up episode 119 of the TortureCast. Sorry that Ben and Willie couldn't be here tonight. Hopefully they can come back next week. Let's just go ahead and pimp whatever we can right now. You can follow us collectively at TortureCast. Also, like us on Facebook. You can check out our YouTube page, which we don't have a lot of content during the season, but we have a lot of great interviews, video interviews of many of the players from Media Day over the past 4 or 5 years. And it's really fun to look back on the interviews with, you know, Tim Lincecum and Buster Posey and Bruce Bochy and, you know, talking to Buster about his NL MVP after the 2012 season. I mean, all these really cool time capsule-y kind of things. I even like to go back and look at, you know, Hunter Pence and all these other guys. You can follow myself at ChadK21. Eric at 2OutHits. That's with the number 2. Willie Dills, of course, for the absent Willie. And Ben, you can follow at Fried Duck. Eric, do you have anything you want to pimp?
No, because if I preview anything and then I don't follow through, I'm going to disappoint like 4 people out there. So I'll just wait. God,
4 people. I don't know.
Right. So I'll wait and try to make 5 people happy. And if I do come through with something this week, I got some stuff in the works, but, I don't want to commit to it just so I disappoint, you know, my 4, you know, adoring fans.
No, it's understandable. So Eric and I actually might be recording in 3 days after the Kansas City series, so look for that podcast, and I have some ideas in the basket in terms of podcast ideas and articles, and I know what Eric does as well, so look for some more content as the series and the year goes on. It looks like I'll be attending a game, not this Saturday, but the following Saturday at home, so look for interviews with the players in a couple of weeks. We'll talk about that in the coming episodes. So yeah, that's it for the absent Willie and Ben. And for Eric, this is Chad King signing off on episode 119. We'll see you maybe Thursday for episode 120 of The TortureCast. See you next time. Boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to The TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying we'll see you next time.